Urgent announcement, America. It's time to rise up and reclaim our values. Welcome to Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. This is your platform for truth and action. Join Steve and our guests as we confront the critical issues facing our nation today. We stand together for a pro-American, pro-family future rooted in our foundational truths. From defending our liberties to preserving our cultural heritage, we're here to ignite insightful discussions and passionate advocacy. Don't miss a moment of this crucial dialogue as we work to reclaim our cultural integrity and shape a brighter tomorrow. Tune in and be a part of the movement. It's your journey to informed citizenship and action. And now, let's dive in and make a difference together. Here's your host, Steve Austin.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the show. You know, these are exciting times, Kelly. There's some encouraging things going on these days. The most recent thing I can think of is Pam Bondi, our new attorney general, has put together a task force to identify and get rid of anti-Christian activity in our government. And the task force was pretty much launched this week. And from what I can tell, they're focused on, you know, during the Biden administration, there was a, you know, either a written or unwritten edict to go after the Christians. We saw that, you know, with parents at school board meetings. We saw it as for folks marching in front of abortion centers. There's been, even before that, during Obama, the IRS went after a lot of 501c3s that stood up for Christianity. And now we have, with the blessing of our president, a task force that's aggressively going after anti-Christian movements within the government and within the country.
So are we safe? Can we feel safe on our own turf now?
Our radio show, I think it's better, yeah. It's interesting how far afield we've gone in this country to the point that, sometimes you don't realize how bad it's gotten until somebody stops and says, wait a minute, you know, This is not what this country's all about, religious liberty.
And I think a lot of people started to pay attention to what was coming down the pike through legislation and thought, what is really going on in our government and what has happened? Who have we put in place? It's kind of scary. I think, you know, we had Lindsey Jones on and we talked a lot about some of the legislation, especially in California. And I'm glad that they're waking up and seeing that this starts from the top and we need to take care of business and clean house. So let's go.
You know, the other state that's starting to rival us is Colorado. I sit on the board of Summit Ministries recently, which is based in the Colorado Springs area. Recently, the CEO of Summit, Jeff Myers, who we've had on the show, was pointing out some of the legislation that's coming down on protecting primarily situations in which gender transitioning and other related activity that we don't support is now getting mandated by the state, including things like company insurance policies now have to provide for transitioning surgeries and things like that. And, of course, that's totally unacceptable to Christian organizations. Mm-hmm. And there's what's odd about Colorado, I just don't understand it. But, you know, if you go to Colorado, you ever been to Colorado Springs?
I've been to Colorado, but I've been to Arvada, Denver.
Denver is Colorado Springs. And it is a enclave of Christian organizations from mm-hmm. Compassion International to Summit to so many the Navigators. It's just like a huge concentration. If you were to look at the earth and identify the most dense Christian communities, Colorado Springs would be right there in the middle of it. Just similar to Orlando, tends to have a lot of Christian organizations. To some extent, Atlanta. Chicago doesn't, L.A., San Francisco is gone. But it's odd. But on the other end of, you know, a couple hundred miles away, you have Boulder, Colorado, steeped in liberalism. You know, Denver has a mayor that is just as left-wing as you can imagine, a little bit younger than the average, you know, mayor these days that is advocating for, you know, all the sanctuary city ideas. But the reality is that, you know, Colorado is giving California a real run for their money with some of the insane legislation. And it's kind of sad to see in this country where we have such strong, clear policies from a president and his cabinet to be, you know, to have these hot spots of anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-God.
Anti-humanity.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I don't get, though, even from a financial standpoint, how are they allowing this to be a part of the insurance, if you will, you know, through companies, or they have to, like you said, they have to make sure that they allow for, these are cosmetic surgeries or cosmetic, even, you know, if you're taking the medication to transition, that's not life threatening. How are they allowing that? I mean, my insurance won't even cover having twins and getting a little tummy tuck, you know, or even pull, you know, a lot of things, even though they still have to go in and fix a muscle inside my stomach, they won't do the tummy tuck at the same time. I have to pay for that extra, right? Mm. So how are they allowing for this cosmetic insurance to go through? I don't even understand from a financial standpoint, let alone
that's a good point. And you know, the problem is the state legislatures, you know, Colorado used to be a pretty red state, but the state legislatures are just full of left-wing folks that come from, you know, various parts of Colorado. And they over, just like in California, the minority, you know, we have, you know, maybe 25 to 30% of our state assembly and state legislatures are conservative. The rest of them are very liberal, anti-God kinds of things. We've let that happen. And we do have a guest coming on, you know, in a couple of shows here that's going to help us focus on getting San Diego County back in shape. But I'm happy to note that there is some encouraging things that are occurring in this country that certainly a change from what we were dealing with a year ago. So we have to be thankful.
Yeah, and you did bring up a good point. Yeah, you brought up a good point. I actually brought this up as, you know, I'm on the planning group and it's not really in our purview, but I was saying it and I got cut off because it's too political probably for my stance there. But, you know, that is the deal with progressive. It's in the name. They're going to continue to progress. And guess which direction? Not in a biblical direction, not in a family-friendly direction, not in a way to preserve our youth or to protect their future. They are going to progress down this road of woke agenda, of harming the youth, and really using our tax dollars to do it. So, you know, just remember when you vote is what I always tell people. You know, people ask all the time, what can we do to stop maybe like the cannabis? We talked about that with Stephanie Baxter, you know. What are some things that we can do to stop this? Well, get out and vote when it matters and it comes down from Sacramento. And don't sit there as Christians and think, oh, no big deal. This is just, you know, one pot plant per person, right? No, it's eventually going to now be in your town, in front of your kids' face. And that's just one example. But, you know, oh, let's allow them to transition if they want to at the age of 18. Well, guess what? Now they want to do it at the age of 12.
Yeah.
It's always going to be progressing. So just, you know, keep an eye out for whatever's coming down the pike. It's only going to get worse. Progressive for a reason.
So, Kelly, as you know, today we have a great guest coming, but he's our regular special guest.
Special. And he's very special. And he comes regular.
So probably anybody that listens to this program can guess his name, but we're not going to let you know that for a few minutes here, and then we'll bring our regular special guest on.
Let's keep it a surprise the whole time. Let's never say his name.
Sweet. Swenson Children's Foundation started to encourage hope and support so that children can have faith in their futures. As it says in Psalms 127:3, children are a blessing and a gift from our Lord. We see God's hand in every outreach opportunity we have had over these last 10 years to provide a blessing to children and their families in need, and will continue to serve our communities from coast to coast. If you would like to learn more about our foundation, please visit our website, SwensonChildrensFoundation.org.
Are you looking for a local, top-tier accounting and consulting firm? Look no further than Swenson Advisors. Since 1998, Swenson Advisors has been delivering personalized, customer-focused services with the expertise of a national firm. Our clients, from middle market public and private companies to high net worth individuals, trust us for our responsive, ethical, and innovative approach. Whether you're in technology, real estate, manufacturing, or the nonprofit sector, Swenson Advisors has you covered. Specializing in lease accounting, audit and assurance, tax services, and consulting, Swenson Advisors delivers tailored solutions for your financial success. We're not just another accounting firm. We're your strategic ally, dedicated to innovative solutions and impeccable service. Ranked among the top 25 accounting firms by the San Diego Business Journal and recognized for our integrity and responsiveness. Join the countless clients who trust Swenson Advisors for their accounting needs. Visit us at SwensonAdvisors.com today or call us at 619-237-3400. Swenson Advisors, expertise you can trust, solutions you can count on.
Welcome back, everybody, and we're delighted, Kelly, to I almost feel like Bill Shisko, Pastor Shisko, is on the co-hosting team here of our program. And Bill, are you on today?
I'm on.
All
I'm
right.
here from the Woo! Other left coast, the okay. one on the right. It isn't on the right.
It's always good to hear your voice, and it is great to have, you know, we reach out to a lot of folks outside of California, Bill, and it helps bring some perspective. We've talked to folks in Colorado and in South Dakota, and but you're kind of our regular East Coast anchor. So, how are you folks doing in Long Island?
Well, we're doing well, Steve. Last time I was on, when I was talking about things politically here in New York, I felt like I was overly negative. So I hope that we'll have a little bit of time. Maybe I can give your audience a few encouraging things today. But no, we're doing very well. And we're very, very thankful. I have, you know, I'm a constitutionalist, and so executive orders can kind of bother me a little bit, but I'm thankful for moving what seems to be a good trajectory with things, especially with moral issues in this country. That's been encouraging.
You know, good. And hey, you know what, Bill? I am glad to hear it, because I know over here in California, everybody on the East Coast looks at us, or in the Midwest, and we are just wackadoodle crazy over here. So I'm glad to hear there's good stuff, because we see New York the same way. We look over at you guys and think there can't be anything good happening politically, socially. So I'm excited to hear about it. But also, you know, let's talk about it so that people can be encouraged. I was just on a podcast today talking about how our thoughts really matter. And even in your marriage, you know, when you start thinking good things about your spouse, good things come out of your spouse. And so let's talk about some good things in New York, and maybe it'll move in that direction.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, as a man thinks in his heart, so he is. You're exactly right.
Right.
But well, let's see. You talk, Steve. Let me know what you want to talk about. I'm ready and raring to go.
Well, I like the topic. You know, it's been, what are we into, 4 or 5 months after the election of Trump and about 100 days in office. There's plenty of things that are a little disturbing. But today, as you know, Pam Bondi has put together a task force. We were talking about this earlier in the introduction, a task force to deal with anti-Christian activity within the government.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is pretty good. But what's your perspective on that task force?
I don't know much about it, Steve. I have to read more. What little I know about it, I'm encouraged. Hearing the accounts of anti-Christian bias would be too weak a word. Almost an anti-Christian vendetta by some makes me thankful for what she wants to do with that. I think particularly is what's happening with Christians in school board meetings. I mean, I forget what state where it was. I read it yesterday, where the parents were made to have their children in these LGBTQ classes. Now, I'm the kind of guy. I say, you know, frankly, excuse the expression, I don't give a tinker's damn what you think. I'm not going to have my kids. I wouldn't have them in the public schools anyway. But I wouldn't have my kids in those programs. And when I read those kinds of things, I think to myself, wow, what's driving this stuff? But it will be interesting to see what Pam Bondi does. And so far, I have been very encouraged by what she's been doing as an attorney general.
Yeah, and also Trump has commented on it in the news a few times. And it's, you know, you think back of the persecution of folks that, you know, were marching in front of Planned Parenthood or other abortion clinics. You know, I realized something. I was reading some statistics on this regarding Planned Parenthood because I mentioned it in a prayer at our church, and somebody on the way out the door says, you know, you really shouldn't say that, Steve. I said, really? But Planned Parenthood, there are 600,000-700,000 abortions in the United States a year. A year. Do you know what percentage of that is done at Planned Parenthood clinics?
I don't know. What's the percentage?
It's about 70%.
Oh, my.
60-70%. So when people try to argue that Planned Parenthood is, you know, some women's health care center, it's just wrong.
Yeah.
So 400,000 plus of the 600,000 are performed at these Planned Parenthood centers. Now, of the live births in this country, this is even more shocking. One out of every five births is aborted in the United States. One out of 20%. 20%. So, you know, you and I was commenting to the person as they were leaving church, Bill, you know how you would stand at the nobody got out of the church without talking to you and shaking your hand. And I kind of stand there as one of the elders to chat with folks a little bit on the way out the door. But I just pushed back. I said, there's nothing political about this. This is a spiritual issue of right and wrong, and taking the life of a child is just insane.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's when you hear those kinds of things, you need to be armed with the statistics. But, you know.
Yeah. And you know, Steve, we talked about this. Language is well, to say the least, language is so important. We're talking about infanticide. We're talking about, with respect to the unborn, what Nazism did with Jews.
Yeah.
And Christians need to keep saying this. It can be incendiary, but be incendiary with it. We pray, well, not every week, but regularly, we pray that the Lord just shut down Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's... But, yeah, those statistics are shocking and so sobering, yeah.
Well, and Trump, I think, is pulling the federal funds out of there.
Yeah.
You know, Biden couldn't give enough money to those folks. And, of course, he opened the door worldwide to, you know, to advocate. Here's our Catholic president advocating abortion. You know, to the south of us, Mexico had a very strong anti-abortion position as a country. And after Biden came in, that all got thrown away, and the Mexican government said, okay, you can have your abortions. And so it's, you know, to me, that is one of the assets. Is, you may not recall this, Bill, but when we were in New York, this goes back, Kelly, 35 years ago, we had the thrill of attending the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Franklin Square, New York, home of Sean Hannity, and on a Saturday, Bill, we went marching with members of your church in front of a hospital, I think. We had our kids, you know, marching, and it was a pro-life march. And it ended up on one of the New York City TV shows. you know, but do you remember that?
Yes, I do. It was with the Church of the Nazarene pastor, Art Alexander. He and I would speak at a number of these different things. I don't know if they still do them. Of course, I'm not in Nassau County anymore. Yeah, yes, I do. But I don't remember that specific one because we were involved with a number of them. Yeah, instantly back on, I don't want to get off that subject, but you were talking about encouraging things. I was very encouraged to read President Trump's executive order, whatever it was, an executive order. It was a statement about Easter and about Holy Week. And, yeah. And I'm not Protestant. I'm not big on the Holy Week language. But that statement in there of Christ as our Lord and Savior, and I wept when I read that. Yeah. And I think, Stephen Kelly, one of the things that we're not as bold about this as we ought to be, but Christ is Lord of Lords and King of Kings, and it's right that nations acknowledge him. That doesn't mean that everybody's a Christian in the country by any means, but he needs to be acknowledged that way. That has been very, very encouraging. And back on the point about President Biden, I wonder, as a pastor, why didn't his priest speak to him and say, you're standing against the official position of the church of which you're a part? But those are the things that baffle me and that grieve me. But I share your concerns, as I always do.
Well, one of the things that was important about that was that the children, our kids, and probably yours and others, you know, when you participate, Kelly, in a march like that, it actually puts quite an impression on the child, and they realize early on that they have to stand up for something sometimes, yeah. And not just talk. Yeah. And well, speaking of other encouraging things, and a little bit of humor, I think, Bill, is our alma mater has been in the news lately.
Yes, it has. It's so, a matter to talk about.
So, Kelly, yeah. You know, Trump, being the ultra businessman, is pulling the funding, at least threatening to pull the funding out of Harvard University. And right. And so if that's not enough, he's going, and we'll just revoke your tax-exempt status. Yeah. And, Bill, you've probably heard news captions about, well, this happened one other time years ago to a school called Bob Jones University.
Jones University, exactly. Right. I've read that. What goes around comes around, huh?
Yeah, we were there during those days. And, you know, as students, you were kind of immune to what was going on outside. But, you know, within the heart of the school administration, you know, they had lawyers. They were spending all kinds of money trying to defend themselves. They ultimately lost their tax-exempt status. And when Reagan came in, he tried to restore it, and it came within inches of getting restored. But somebody kind of got wind of it and kicked that out. And then it has been restored in the last 4 or 5 years by virtue of restructuring the organization and whatnot. But here's a school that never took any federal funds, didn't have Pell Grants or any of that kind of funny government money, and basically got their hand slapped. What is that, Bill? 50 years ago now?
Oh, I think so. Was that? We were there 7.
And that has a huge impact on giving because people want their tax deduction. You know, I support the school, not in any huge amounts, but you know, it's the type of school. You know, Hillsdale is another great example of a school that's never taken any government funds.
And we're big supporters of Hillsdale. I think it's called a Christian school. It really isn't, but they do try to do justice to historic Christianity there. And it's a little oasis of sanity that's another term. I don't use the term higher education. I don't like oxymorons because in most cases it really isn't higher education in the United States. I for one, and here I am, Stephen Kelly. I'm a Calvin Coolidge man. The more I read about him, the more I appreciate him. But frankly, I don't know why the federal government gives any assistance to these schools, even state schools. I wish the government would get out of education, period, and let private organizations do it. But even at 73, Stephen Kelly, I'm still an idealist in many ways.
Well, I think we are making progress. For what, you know, I'm the chairman of the board of a of San Diego Christian College, and we're a small school, but we have to submit to a lot of the DOE regulations. And so working with the president, Dr. David Poole, who we've had on the air, Kelly, a few times, I was talking to him the other day about all the federal filings. Bill, it's just unbelievable behind the scenes, the amount of the quagmire of filings and regulatory activity. But I said, well, did you get this such and such filed by March 31? He said, yeah. He says, but I have to tell you, normally when we file it, we deal with so-and-so in San Francisco, the DOE. He says, I called up there, and there used to be 20 people handling this stuff. Today, there's one.
Wow.
So, you know, they're purging a lot of that. But, you know, here's Harvard, who, you know, has $50 billion with a B in an endowment fund, wanting government money. Why would you ever give, for research or anything, a school with $50 billion in their endowment fund, why would you give them a nickel? It's just pretty insane. And then you don't, you know, Harvard always had this kind of phenomenal image, Bill, of academic excellence, only to find out it's chock full of anti-American, anti-Jewish beliefs and Marxist professors.
Oh, well, their divinity department has no relation with historic divinity. You read about the beginning of Harvard in the 1600s. Its commitment to the Christian faith was mind bending to read. And of course, for many years it served to they were going to help raise up ministers for when this generation lies in the dust or something like that. And really, for about 100 years, they had a great testimony. But then Unitarianism in New England began to erode Harvard, as it did many other things. That's an interesting and sad period of American history or development, is how vibrant Christianity in many cases deteriorated into Unitarianism, deism, eventually Transcendentalism. But that's for another day. I want to talk about New York a little bit. I want to encourage you.
Okay.
Well, I did. I felt bad last time when I spoke. I felt like I was unduly negative. I for various reasons, I have issues with New York State Republican Party and Conservative Party. But I think it reflected it. However, in the last month, there have been some very, very interesting developments. I love the language of the Lord twisting the chariot wheels of the Egyptians. And I use that and when it comes to what's happening within the Democrat Party in New York, there are now people that want to run against Governor Hochul on the Democrat side, which is encouraging because we've been quite monolithic in the state. But the other is, last time I'd mentioned candidates, that I didn't see any candidates on the Republican side. I knew of some, but now, interestingly, with Elise Stefanik is being considered. She, of course, was Donald Trump's choice to be UN ambassador, but she is remaining on in the House of Representatives because of the razor thin margin there. But there is talk of her running for governor, and she is a very, very effective politician. She and then also Mike Lawler, who is the other one being considered, Mike Lawler. Both of them were in Democrat districts, turned them Republican. They're respected. We mentioned Harvard. It's interesting that Elise Stefanik is a Harvard graduate, and she's young. I think she's only about 40 years old, and that's encouraging. I thought specifically seeing younger ones coming up in the ranks in New York. So that is going to be something to watch, because Lawler, who is basically a kind of an ironic guy, but he said that Governor Hochul is he says the most ineffective, feckless governor in America. She's up there in the top five, I'll say that, but she's not popular, and she can be very abrasive. And even when Lee Zeldin ran in 2022, and of course now he's in President Trump's cabinet, and housing and development, I forget where he is, but he really did very well in New York in 2022. So those are encouraging things. The other thing you've asked about that is, I'm fascinated with it, even though we're on the outskirts of the city. We're in Suffolk County on Long Island. Mayor Adams in New York City, that's been an interesting thing. He's now running as an independent, and everybody's talking about Andrew Cuomo as being a shoe-in for the nomination for mayor of New York. I'm not sure that's the case. Andrew Cuomo's a lightning rod, and he's got the name recognition, and he's got the New York bombast.
He may not get too many senior citizens to vote for him.
No, I don't think so, nor should they. But Mayor Adams, he's pushing the book by Kash Patel. What is it? Fighting. I forget the title of the book now, about the weaponizing of government. And that's very, very. Oh, yeah. What is it? Government Gangsters, I think the book is. And Mayor Adams is out pushing this book in New York because that's frankly what happened to him. Didn't toe the line with the immigration issue. And I think New Yorkers, we talked a little bit last time about sanity with things. And I think at least Long Island tends to be more conservative than most of the state, but upstate tends to be conservative. But people are, by and large, and being a sanctuary state for illegal immigrants, oh, hello. And so I think these are going to make Governor Hochul, rightly, they're going to make her vulnerable. And so I'm more encouraged than I was a month ago. And I wanted to make amends for what I said a month ago.
Okay, good. you're amended.
All right.
By the way, Bill, one of your leaders there in the state, Lee Zeldin, now head of the EPA, came to visit San Diego yesterday.
Oh, did he? Good.
Kelly, I know you're aware of this, and we got another guest that's going to come on here in a while that's going to talk more about it. But we have a very interesting situation in the very southwestern corner of this country, literally the very southwestern corner that meets up with Tijuana, Mexico. And there has been a sewage problem for decades, not years, not months, not years, but for decades, in which the Tijuana, which of course has grown a lot, sewage system cannot manage or handle its refuge. As a result, it flows into the Tijuana River, which flows into the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, which then flows up the coast to San Diego, to Coronado. And the people that live along the beach, you'd think, boy, I have a beach home in Chula Vista or in Imperial Beach or something, would be just this idyllic situation. It's unbelievably bad. You walk into your house, you have to keep all your windows closed. The outdoor, you can't walk on the beach. You certainly can't swim in the water. And this has been going on for years. Our wonderful governor has not called this an emergency. The SEALs, the Navy SEALs, train in this stuff just a few miles north off of the Coronado Islands, and they're sick a lot because of it. And it's just the most unsanitary thing you could possibly imagine. And the amazing thing, so the EPA, it's kind of like what was up in New York was the big EPA problem back in the 60s, Bill, the canal.
The Erie Canal?
Well, not the Erie Canal, but there was a housing development up there. In fact, I rode a bike through it once that was so contaminated, and it actually kind of started off these superfunds, EPA superfunds. But this stuff is unbelievable. And we have congressmen like Daryl Issa, and we have the county supervisors, all kinds of people over the years. The mayors have made, if pardon the expression, quite a stink over it. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. And a lot of it has to do with the volume. It has to do with the processing equipment And of course, Mexico is doing, while aware of it, they really don't care. And so, anyhow, he came out yesterday, was really, I don't know if you saw the coverage, Kelly, it was really the story in San Diego. But yeah. I have to tell you, you would think, and Trump was talking about it on Air Force One the other day, you would think with all the coverage, not just this year, but for years and decades, that somebody would fix it. Now, it's about a $1 billion problem, but Bill, as you know, $1 billion is not a lot of money these days in this country.
Exactly.
But it's it fascinates me why, here's beautiful San Diego County, why we can't deal with an issue like this more rapidly. It's just and it may be more than a $1 billion issue. And of course, it's a cross border issue. Anyhow, Lee Zeldin did come out. So we got the EPA out. And of course, people tried during the Biden administration when this thing was becoming progressively worse, because it used to be at a point where they would shut the beaches down for maybe a few days. Now it's shut down for months and months and months. And now that our Navy SEALs are getting sick, it's an interesting situation. But he was out yesterday with quite an entourage, touring everything, looking at everything, smelling everything. And hopefully he goes back. And I'm hopeful that, Trump will simply make something happen on this, because it's about time.
Mm. Yeah, and that is the kind of thing with federal government does need to be involved with, because when you're dealing with Navy SEALs. Here you go. I'll pique your interest, Kelly and Steve. I want to suggest to you both that ultimately those issues of the environment are religious issues. I'll give you an illustration from a mission situation. But the Protestant Reformation emphasized man's dominion over the earth, not in a cruel way, but rather you have responsibility to steward your environment. And most people don't realize our modern sanitation system began in Calvin's Geneva when he went to the city council and he said, if you want to have a reformed city, one of a Protestant city, then you need to clean up the streets. Interestingly, because he said it's not to the glory of God that you have rats running around. Well, you got the environmentalists today and all their kind of romantic views of things. But a Christian view would say we have a responsibility, sixth commandment, not to kill, to get this environment cleaned up. And when you have a waning of religious commitments, which really are heart commitments, there will be a weakness in these areas. And then you see where the reaction comes in when you have the kind of goofy progressive side of things where they worship trees and so on. But yeah, we're going back. If there were deep seated, and I'll even go so far as, well, say Judeo-Christian convictions, there would be a passion to get this cleaned up. People are dying from it. So. Yeah. Ultimately, Steve and Kelly, every issue is a religious issue.
You're absolutely right, Bill, and that's one of the things that we have to continue to preach, that these are not red or blue issues. They're not Republican, Democratic issues. These are either godly or anti-God issues.
Absolutely. Yeah, they benefit man as man, and that's an important point when we're out there in a culture. I love to tell people marriage is not a distinctively Christian ordinance. Marriage came in before the fall, and it's for people as people. Now, what's very sobering is that every marriage is meant to represent Christ and the church, because God has ordained that everything in a real sense be a reflection of him and of his redemptive work. But when we start approaching things like that, that enables us to connect with our culture in the right ways. And one of my points when I was jotting down some things for today, it's very important to always emphasize, both Kelly and Steve, there is no neutrality. At every single point, there is the technical word is in an antithesis, but at every single point, there is a radical clash, between belief and the God who's revealed himself in Scripture and in creation and everything else.
Well, you know, you make a great point, and that's part of what the PAC has been talking about a lot, is really the need to look at this through biblical citizenship, through biblical perspectives. And that's what drives us to get up in the morning and go fight the fight. So, Bill, I'm going to throw one at you. The Pope passed away this week. Interestingly enough, right after he showed up on Easter.
And that's not unusual. I mean, you see, pastors see this. You all see it. A person can rally shortly before they pass from this life, and I think that's what happened with him. But yeah.
So, how should Protestant Christians look at all this?
Yeah. Well, it's a huge, huge question. Historically, the Protestants have held, and I want to be very careful how I say this, so it's not misunderstood, that the papacy as an establishment was antichrist. That's not making a statement about individual popes, but as a system, it really does put itself above Christ, which is the meaning of antichrist. I'm always careful when I say this. I have so many dear Roman Catholic friends, and that's not the kind of thing I hit them with. But, you know, you deal with, you know, what is our final authority and so on. So you've got that. This particular pope is interesting. On the one hand, he's called the People's Pope, and he very much identified with the poor and the needy. And on that level, I appreciate that very much. The other side of it is so many of the things that he taught, I wondered where he got this out of Roman Catholic dogma. He kind of danced around the whole issue of dealing with homosexuality and the church. He wanted to bless those unions, but at the same time, God opposed them. I don't know. So if I were a Roman Catholic, which I'm not, obviously, but if I were a Roman Catholic, I would want someone a little bit more like Cardinal Ratzinger or Pope Benedict, who really did hold to, even though he held to the final authority of sacred tradition plus the scriptures, he had a very, very high view for historic Christian teaching. And that's what I hope will happen with the Pope. I think they're probably going to want to pick a more populist person. That's kind of the wave of the future. But I think for your audience, Stephen and Kelly, it is interesting how the Roman Catholic Church over the years has really been, and I'll use the word prophetic, small p, not like the scriptures, but back in 58, 59, when the birth control pill was legalized, it was the Roman Catholic Church. Protestants didn't know what to say, by and large. The Roman Catholic Church made it really clear that with the legalization of birth control pills, there was going to be a breakdown, a severe breakdown in the whole matter of what sexuality is, what sexual intimacy is. Now, in old historic Roman Catholic teaching, the only reason for sexual intimacy is to have children. Well, that's an extreme. At the same time, there was a very high view of the fact that intimacy, sexual intimacy, is to be confined to marriage. At that point, I appreciate what the Roman Catholic Church said. It took Protestants a while to catch up, if they ever have, with it. So I'm kind of waltzing around the whole thing. I hope they pick someone who really is convinced of the biblical elements of historic Christian teaching. I'll put it like that. But it's going to be interesting to watch.
You know, it is interesting, Bill and Kelly, there's been quite a few priests and cardinals and whatnot interviewed in light of the situation. And you know, you have to kind of dissect their comments as it relates to Christ, because they will refer to him as Lord and Savior. But in the next breath, they talk about, you know, the Pope, our Father. And so and I run into more and more folks, and Bill, I mean, you're dealing with people all the time that really can't distinguish between biblical Christianity and Catholicism. Though correct. The other day I was shopping, I do shopping at the grocery store because Gail doesn't buy things I like, you know, like ice cream. And I was checking out on this store I go to, and the bag boy, his name, and this is not unusual, was Jesus, Jesus.
Jesus. Yeah.
And it was right at Easter time, and I said, did you have a good Easter? He said, oh, yeah, people love my name at Easter time. I said, well, are you a Christian? He said, no, I'm a Catholic. So, it is interesting to see how, you know, there is a segregation in thinking. And a lot of it, though, Bill, as you know, gets down to teaching, scripture and teaching biblical principles, and how do you distinguish that from Catholicism?
Yeah, and it's important. We used to be able to use the term co-belligerents, but not allies, when it came to Roman Catholics, especially in the pro-life cause, where I don't mind marching with a Roman Catholic. I'm thankful to do it because on that score, we're in agreement. What I found happening, Stephen Kelly, I mean, at one point in Franklin Square, I think maybe at least probably 60% of our folks in Franklin Square had been, where I was pastor, were former Roman Catholics. And as they would go through our membership preparation class, and we'd meet with them, I would just kind of like one peeling open an onion, would just deal with the differences between the Church of Rome and the Scriptures. And I saw the pattern. These were people who had been brought up in the Roman Church, and they would get bitter. They said, why were we in the church all of our lives? We never learned any of this stuff. So they're just an important. It's a little bit like the Protestant Reformation all over again. You just open up the scriptures for people, and it's amazing what God does. But it will be interesting to see. I mean, the last Pope, Pope Francis, was, at least as I read it, he'd been influenced by South American liberation theology to some extent, which is marked. And some of the things he said certainly sounded like that. I would hope they don't move in that direction again, but it will be interesting.
We know, Kelly, one of the words, and Bill, that really bothers me is the word progressive. You know, there's like nothing not progressive about the progressive ideology that's being advanced. It's a misnomer. It should be called regressive.
Oh, exactly, Steve. We say the same thing. You and I are brothers in more ways than one. We say that as well. It is not, and it is. It really is a move toward barbarianism in many ways. The other thing connected with it, I don't want to get you too far afield. I've been interested in, believe it or not, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, believe it or not, is being spoken of as a leader to be the Democrat presidential nominee in 2028. And I thought, oh, please. But it's very interesting how she and Bernie Sanders are going around dealing with this fighting oligarchy. They got a whole website about this. I think to myself, you two are socialists. Do you know what socialism is? It's the quintessential oligarchy where a few people run, control everything. And for your listeners, I hope they're aware of the book Animal Farm by George Orwell, as well as 1984. That's an important book to read. I mean, Orwell was a socialist. He was what he called a benign socialist. There really isn't such a thing. He really thought there could be a socialism that wasn't tyrannical. But when he saw what happened in Russia, he that's when he began to write the 1984, which was his last book, and an Animal Farm. But people need to read that. It's prescient in the way it describes what socialism is. But yeah, here again, we've got it words, Stephen Kelly. We've talked about this. Words mean things.
Well, I think our challenge, Kelly, is on our show here and in our day-to-day life, is to, when somebody uses the word progressive, you need to stop and say, excuse me, you mean regressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether it's they're the economy, progressing regressively.
Yeah. So it's the ultimate lie. Yeah, I mean, it sounds great, progression. But the reality is it's moving backwards in life. And,
absolutely.
Well, Bill, we're almost out of time today, but I have to say it's always – your program is run on KPRZ on Sundays right after church. You're the after-church drive time person most Sundays. And it works out nice for Gail and I because our church starts at about 10:30, and we're out of there by noon. So we're in the car, and we turn on 12:10 a.m. KPRZ, and after a couple of commercials, Gail goes, "I know that voice." And so
what does she think about it now? Is she enjoying it a little bit more?
She loves listening to Bill. You know, Bill was just a phenomenal, and is a phenomenal pastor in New York, and is really part of our regular team here these days. But we appreciate the comments. Next month we'll have you on, and we'll continue to tie out current events, the Protestant Reformation, and you know, just try to continue.
And hopefully good news.
Continue.
Well, it's my delight to be with both of you. Kelly, I look forward to meeting you one of these days. And Steve,
I can't wait.
Well, you're going to be out on, aren't you going to be out on the West Coast this summer some?
Yeah, this summer, not up in your area, not down in your area, but I'm hoping that next year with your project that you have down in San Diego, Margaret and I are hopeful that we can be down there to join you.
That'd be great. We'll bring you in the studio, and Bill, we'll do this thing live in the studio.
Oh, that'd be fun. It'd be great. Radio
I'll
is my...
Down,
I told you, I'm not a TV fan at all, but I'm a big fan of radio, so may the Lord continue to bless richly what you're both doing.
All right. Well, thank you again, Bill, and have a wonderful evening there in Long Island, and say hello to Margaret and the children.
You also be careful swimming in that part of the Pacific.
Not me, man.
Seriously. We'll stay out.
You won't see me there.
Okay. God bless you.
Thank you very much.
All right. God bless you.
All right. Well, stay tuned for next week for another riveting show with special guests. And
so much to unpack.
Yep.
That concludes another powerful episode of Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. We thank you for joining us today as we tackled the crucial issues facing our beloved nation. Remember, we stand united for a pro-American, pro-family future deeply rooted in our foundational truths. The insightful discussions and passionate advocacy you've heard here today are just the beginning of our journey to reclaim our cultural integrity. Stay informed, stay engaged, and join us next week as we continue to shape a better tomorrow. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, let's keep standing strong for what matters most.